Good morning, Jake, as well. If you want to have a seat, we're going to dive on into the rest of our service here. It's good to have you all with us this morning. I'm Greg Meyer, pastor with Jacob's Well. And wow, it's a beautiful fall day. Anybody enjoy that extra hour of sleep this morning? Yes, all right. In fact, I liked it so much, I am going to contact the United States this week, and we're going to do it again next week. All right? And dude, if we do it 24 times, we just sort of start over, and that, you know, so I'm going for it. That was kind of fun. All right, hey, we're in our second week of this series called Four Revolutions That You and the Bible Agree On. And I think these are some of the most important things that we can talk about. And here's one of the problems. There are things in this world that all of us just kind of instinctively know, you know, it just shouldn't be this way, and it drives us crazy. And we want our lives to be more about it, and it's really hard because we feel like we're alone. No one else gets it. And, you know, so that's frustrating, and we just can't make it happen. And one of the second pieces about that is we don't see the church as really having been part of the solution. In fact, in many cases, and probably particularly for the people who aren't here, we see the church as having been part of the problem, certainly not trying to solve what these revolutions are all trying to get at. And, you know, that's really too bad, I guess. Last week, Dawn was here, and she was speaking about this first revolution about fantastic, not fanatic. Maybe you kind of have resonated with that, too. I mean, you're probably one of these people that feels like our spirituality, the faith, is so important to us, and it's so fundamental to how we look at the world and how we're going to live, that we need to not have less of it. We need to have more of it. In fact, it needs to have a role in our society and how we make decisions as societies. Yet while we feel that, at the same time, people that actually do that kind of scare us because they take this fantastic thing that the gospel is all about and how the gospel wants to transform the world, and they turn it into some sort of fanaticism that is just kind of spooky and seems to be more of their agenda than of God's will and God's love in the world. You know, so there's that balance. How do we do that? And Dawn talked about that. If you missed that message, you can go online and hear it. I think it's some important stuff. Today I want to dive into the second revolution, and that is better than bigger. There's got to be something better than bigger. I would like to slay this monster of, you know, that bigger is better. Because I think all of us agree with this one, too. I'm pretty much all of you would probably say that, you know, this idea that bigger is better just simply isn't true, although our society continually buys into it. One of the problems is, while we all like to think that bigger isn't better, nonetheless, we tend, and that there is something better than bigger, nonetheless, we tend to run our lives as though bigger is better. And we spend a lot of time and a lot of energy and just focus a lot of our life about realizing that bigger thing. Yeah, as I was creating the titles for these revolutions, I was also thinking that this week could be more than more. There's got to be something more than just more. So you can put both of those. I mean, bigger and more are kind of the same animal that we need to slay, and that's what we're going to be talking about, trying to dethrone that. So as I was thinking about this and trying to understand what the Bible has to say, so, you know, what is this option that might be better than bigger? I was drawn to the book of Ecclesiastes. You all have that one pretty much down, right? It's not one you hear too much about, the book of Ecclesiastes. But it really dives into this issue. It's an Old Testament book. And let me just give you a little background on the book of Ecclesiastes before I read from it. And so the book of Ecclesiastes is understood to be kind of this book of wisdom writings. And it dates from long before the time of Jesus. In fact, the author of it is understood to be Solomon, who was the son of King David. Whether he actually was or wasn't isn't really the point. It comes out of that wisdom tradition that he was also a part of. And so it's at least 2,300 years ago. Probably its roots come from 26 to 3,000 years ago. And that's what this all comes out of. Now, what's really interesting about the book of Ecclesiastes, and you all remember this, maybe last time you read it, maybe last week or something, right, is that it really bucks tradition. I mean, if you were a good Jewish person and you read this, you know, I'm talking about long, long, long ago, okay, you would have said, what? This isn't what our faith is about. This isn't who we're about. This is it's a very different voice in the Old Testament to have this even be spoken. And one of the really significant things about the book of Ecclesiastes is it raises this kind of weird tension, which you'll be hearing in just a second, and it doesn't resolve it. Now, commentators who try to, you know, write and about the book of Ecclesiastes, and preachers who try to preach about it, especially the kinds that are on television and stuff, almost they just can't stand that, and they have to resolve it. So they kind of get and say, well, overall, what he really means is, well, no, he doesn't do that. He just sort of lets it sit there. He says, and I think the message of that is that this is really what life is like. And if you don't own up to it, you're never going to find a life that maybe does have some resolution, that has found some of that meaning. So with all that said, let me actually read you the first 11 verses of the book of Ecclesiastes, all right? Again, thinking, we're looking today for something that's better than bigger, okay? The words of the teacher. And this is, by the way, and if you flip over your Sunday paper, you'll see it printed there. It's also up on the screen, so you can follow it either way. The words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the teacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity, just in case you hadn't caught that. What do people gain from all the toil at which they toil under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hurries back to the place where it rises again. The wind blows to the south and it goes round to the north. Round and round goes the wind, and on its circuit the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they continue to flow. All things are wearisome, more than one can express. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Did you know that's where that expression that we have in English comes from? It's from the book of Ecclesiastes. There's actually three or four of them that come from this book. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has already been in the ages before us. The people of long ago are not remembered, nor will there be any remembrance of people yet to come by those who come after them. Now, how's that for your little pick-me-up reading in the morning? Yeah, a little bit of inspirational devotion just to start off the day. Okay, so that's the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, what's interesting about this is that he's really painting the picture than just chasing after stuff doesn't really work. And now think about it, okay? This was written at least 2,300 years ago. That's before SUVs, before iPhones. That's even before they had such things as these, you know, self-storage places that you could go put the stuff that doesn't fit in your house, you know? In fact, this is before they had flush toilets. I mean, this is before they even had bathrooms in their houses. And already, on the scale of what he was reflecting on, is saying, even with the little we have, it's like, none of this really matters. Asking the same questions about, is bigger really better, and is more really more, that we're asking today. We haven't passed it. I think it's just the human condition. This is the way it is. Now, so he goes on, and you know, it makes the bad thing even worse. Okay, so he says, this is really horrible. You know, nothing seems to be good enough, so I'm going to try to max it out. I'm going to try and figure it out. So he goes to chapter 2, and this, you just have to listen to me reading it. He says, I said to myself, come now, I will make a test of pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But again, this was also vanity. I'm going to jump down a few verses. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forests of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves that were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had ever been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and the delights of the flesh, and many concubines. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had spent in doing it. And again, all was vanity and a chasing after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. And a few verses later, he reflects on it and says, so I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a chasing after wind. Okay. I think what he's trying to tell us is something that we know. something that we need to face, and something that as long as we don't face it, we just keep chasing it as if it is the answer, and we need to wake up to the fact that it isn't. And the truth is that this idea that bigger is better doesn't only not satisfy us, it also just simply doesn't work as a system for us to run our lives or for the world to operate in. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't work. Take the planet Earth, for example. You guys are familiar with that. We live up there on the top side a little bit. You've heard all the news in the last couple of weeks. We figured that the 7 billionth person was added to our planet just in these last couple of weeks here someplace. 7 billion of us. Of those 7 billion, about 1 billion's worth of those live in a lifestyle similar to us here in North America. A middle class lifestyle that is based on pretty hyper consumption of energy and resources and experiences and things like that. Okay? So that's about, you know, 1 out of 7 are able to live that way. Now, they figure that, you know, with that level of consumption, this planet here could handle about 1.2 to 1.5 billion people living at our lifestyle. There's 7 billion people here, but about 1.2 to 1.5 would exhaust the resources of this planet. What we also know is that in the next 20 to 30 years, with the rising of a middle class in other countries, China, for instance, with its 1.3 billion people right now and growing, India, which is expected to surpass China's population in the next 20 to 30 years, countries like Brazil, where a middle class is rising up very quickly, expansion in Europe and Japan, countries like that, in the next 20 to 30 years, we should have 2 to 3 billion people able to live at our middle class lifestyle on this planet. And that will mean that we require this, 3 planet Earths. Now, I spent some time on eBay, Craigslist, and Amazon, and getting another planet is really hard, you know? A Google search, I couldn't even find hits on that, you know, on how to do it. It isn't going to happen. I mean, it is not sustainable. We cannot all move to having our kind of bigger to be better in this world. It's got to have to happen a different way. Now, it can be done differently. Europe and Japan maintain a middle class with a much, you know, smaller footprint, a lot less resources required than we do. But they are not the answer. I mean, that's just like a scaled-down version of not quite as big as better. You know, and that isn't the answer for us either. There has to be something different. There has to be something that acknowledges what Ecclesiastes is working at. And we're going to have to start framing our heads around this. As I was thinking about this, I couldn't help but think about this video here. Let's just watch this real fast.
Stuff. Stop piling stuff you don't want in your closets, garage, and basement. Stop filling up your pantry with food you don't even like. Start getting less instead. Hi, I'm Lester Moore, and I'd like to talk to you about this fantastic thing I've discovered called less. Just like you, I worked hard to get cool things, follow fashion, and pick up the latest piece of technology. I could barely get through a week without picking up more stuff. In fact, at one point, I even had to rent a storage locker to fit all my stuff. That's when I realized what I really needed wasn't more, it was less.
Now that I have less, my closet seems enormous.
Less is a way for people to simplify their lives and make their life more manageable. Less can free up space, time, and money. And the greatest thing about less is that you can get less for everywhere. The pantry, garage, basements, closets, chests, dressers, more. Any place you've got piles of stuff, you can get less to fit your needs. You can even eat less. There's even a special guide to less. The guide to less has all the tips and tricks you need to use less everywhere you go. We'll show you all the places you can donate more so you automatically get less. Right now you can get less with no payments, no interest, and no money down ever. You can keep your hard-earned money in the bank. But wait, we're not through yet. Get less today, and you can even get less for small spaces, basements, and pantries free. Visit getlesstoday.com, and we'll show you how to get less for absolutely every part of your life. Don't delay. Get less today.
Your satisfaction with less is guaranteed. If after 30 days you're not completely satisfied with less, you can get more. Don't be fooled by products pretending to be less. Remember, if it's more, it's not less. Less is not compatible with more. Less is a part of a balanced diet. Less is not only safe for children, it's recommended.
Who'd have thunk it, you know? Yeah, that's good. Someone worked really hard on that. That's great. You know, now, less isn't the answer. I mean, that's when I say there's got to be something better than bigger. The answer isn't less. But less certainly has a role to play in it, I think. And we'll get around to a little bit about it. But what I like to say is when we're starting to reconcile this idea that we know there's got to be something than bigger, better than bigger, and we know that God is trying to lead us to something that is better than just bigger or more, what it tells us is that there are limits to growth. Now, that's almost like obscene language in our culture. What? Limits to growth? There can't always be more? My company's not to continue to expand. The GMP can't keep going bigger and bigger. And one generation after a generation can't have a higher and a greater lifestyle than the one before. That's not good. That's the wrong thing. You know, that's the wrong direction to go. But there are limits to growth. And that's simply how it's intended to be. God created nature to have limits to its growth. I'm going to move on. Book of Ecclesiastes. You heard from the first chapter. You heard from the second chapter. Let me read you the beginning of the third chapter. Some of you will recognize these verses. Simon and Garfunkel made them famous. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. There's more. The point of this isn't just that there's lots of seasons of life. It also says that, you know, there's a place for different things. There's nothing wrong necessarily with more. There's not necessarily anything wrong with bigger, but there's also not something wrong with less. That these things are part of how the world goes. While there is growth and there is bigger and there is increasing, there's also a place for death. There's a place for smaller. There's a place for decreasing. There's even a place for less. And that doesn't mean something is wrong when those things happen. It means that there are things other than that spiral of bigger and more. I think we all know that. You know, it's the fact that we have to have more and that it has to get bigger and we have to somehow push that and realize that is driving us crazy. We want to shout to the world that stop, this isn't going to work. We realize how unsustainable it is for our world and it's got to be done differently. And we know that God is trying to show us and move our hearts in ways that see it differently. And we just want people to wake up to it and to realize it, that with us. So I was in New York City a couple weeks ago. And New York City is short on space, right? You know, they can do with less rather than more. And so Fiats are a big deal there. And I saw this ad when I was there. Bigger isn't better. It's just harder to park, you know? And if you live in New York after you live in South Minneapolis and have to park on the street, that makes sense. I mean, how many parking spots have you had to drive by because your car was too big for them, you know? Bigger isn't better. It's just harder to park. But you can say that about a lot of things in life, like this. You know, bigger isn't better, it just makes you fatter. Or how about this? Bigger isn't better, it just takes more time and money to keep it up. You know, when are we going to stop this? When are we going to realize there's something different? And God created things with a different kind of logic, a different kind of truth built into them that we need to learn from, because that's how the world really works. And take a tree, for instance. You know, trees, many of them grow big, some of them even grow huge, but they don't keep growing bigger and they don't last forever. No, what do they do instead? Growth for them means not only getting bigger, because there is a max to that for any type of tree, it means doing other things like what? Flowering, fruiting, giving birth to others. So growth for them is not only getting bigger, it's giving life to the world. That's what it's all about. That's what trees chase. I think God's given us some hints of where maybe we need to start looking when we get to this idea of looking for what is bigger than better. So just to recap, or what is better than bigger. I'll get that right one of these times. So let's recap. First of all, and these are some fill-ins on your outline on the back of your Sunday paper if you want to do that. So bigger and more aren't bad. All right? Bigger and more aren't bad. There are times when those are good. But not just because they're bigger and more. It's just because we actually need those things. But as a goal, they are destructive. When bigger or more become the goal, it becomes destructive for us as individuals, for us as a world. Likewise, less is not better. Less is not intrinsically better. There are people in this world who need more just to have a decent and a respectful life. There are times when we need it as well. But we need to learn to be content with less if we're ever going to really understand the value of more in our lives. And I think that's something that we all know. We have a hard time reconciling ourselves to, but we all know that we need, as individuals, to learn to be content with less so that we can understand the value of more. Okay, so if you want to be part of this revolution of discovering and being a part of what is better than bigger, I think these are the clues that God gives us. God doesn't just have a replacement. There isn't a different ending for that sentence that, you know, better than bigger is this. No, God says, I don't want you to even look at it that way. I mean, that's just the wrong way to think that there's just a goal there. Rather, God says, and I think we find these in the book of Ecclesiastes as we walk through it, God shows us some considerations. So God says, as you make decisions, I want you to consider these things. All right? Because these will help you make good decisions, much better decisions than just looking for bigger or more. And now, one thing about these before I dive into these five is you'll very seldom find a decision or a choice in life that meets all five of them. In fact, you may never even find one that meets one of them perfectly. But moving in the direction of them, letting them lead and guide decisions, I think gives us much more healthy. They give us decisions that make a lot more sense with what life that is really life is all about, not only for us as individuals, but for us as a world. And they start creating the kind of world that we actually would want to live in and we'd want to raise our children in. So what are they? The first consideration is connection. Connection. By that I mean this recognition of and relationship to others. God is passionate about connection. God created this world in ways that it only works when things get woven into each other in ways that they can't be separated and still understand their life as being life. All right? Connection is so important. Here, Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 8, the writer goes, I saw a man who had no family, no son or brother. He always worked hard but was never satisfied with what he had. He never asked himself, for whom am I working so hard? Why don't I let myself enjoy life? This also is very sad and useless. Connection. God wants us to have connection with one another. It's a fundamental message of the Bible. And it's not just with people. The connection that God seeks is not just with people. It's with all the earth. It's with this entire planet, with our universe. In fact, that's a focus of another week that you'll be hearing here. The next is related to it. But it makes a separate and I think a very important claim about this connection, and that is reverence for life. When you are making choices, when you are making decisions about which way to go, God is saying, think about which one of them has the most reverence for life. Now, the reverence for life means considering other things, but for their own sake, not just for the benefit that they happen to give you. God created all things and called them good, not just good because they serve you. They are good because for in and of their own sake. And that's an important consideration for us to have. Not to think that the whole world is always meant to just serve us. But how do our decisions reflect reverence for all life around us or not? A third is mindfulness. Mindfulness. That is this ability to be present in the moment that you are actually living in. How can I be present in this moment? Well, some of you are going to say, hey, that's kind of a Zen thing, isn't it? I mean, isn't that kind of Buddhist? Yeah, it is. Was Jesus about it? Is the Bible about it too? Yep, they are. I mean, just because it's something that belongs to one faith doesn't mean that it isn't another faith as well. A God is big, last time I checked out, you know, and God created all things, and God's truth sort of permeates this world, and it's good for us to learn from one another, okay? Mindfulness, this concept, is very much a part of what Jesus is all about. Ecclesiastes 9:9. I love this verse. It's related from, well, actually here it's, never mind that comment. Okay, Ecclesiastes 9:9. It says this, relish life with the spouse you love each and every day of your precarious life. Each day is God's gift. It's all you get in exchange for the hard work of staying alive. Make the most of each one. Be mindful that today, don't spend your day worrying and being regretful about tomorrow, about anticipating and waiting for, of yesterday that was, or waiting or anticipating tomorrow. Live in the day that God has given you today. Now, an interesting note about mindfulness is that this criterion doesn't have so much to say about what we might do or not do, but how we would be in relationship with what it is that we choose to do. Mindfulness can be applied to any situation, any choice you might happen. It's a way of operating in the world of the choices that we make, and it's an important thing to have for ourselves. So we have this connection, reverence for life, mindfulness. The next is fulfillment. Fulfillment. How does this choice, you have a choice in front of you, and how does this fulfill your life? And the thing about this and what we learn about fulfillment from the Bible is that real fulfillment happens through serving. It is opposed to this idea of fullness that happens through having. All right? I think we can see the juxtaposition here with this whole problem of bigger is better. Fulfillment through serving, not fullness through having. It's one of the major themes of the Bible. It says a lot about the bigger and the more idea. It's this idea that you are a pipe, not a bucket. Okay, God's love, God's grace, the things that God wants to fill your life with are things that run through your life, not the things that you have and hold on to. And those are the things that really become important to us. That includes the people that come and go into our lives. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was at Southwest High School at a concert, and Nathan Knoll is the music director, the choir director there, and the choir is going to sing a song about Stephen Foster, and he shared a few words that just totally connected with me on this message. And as he said, Stephen Foster, who wrote a lot of the American songs that we know, he was the first American who decided he was going to make a living by writing music and selling music. And he died penniless. He wrote songs like, you know, Camptown Racetrack, Oh Susanna, I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, you know, a bunch of songs that we know. So his life, I suppose you could say he was a failure because he died just dirt poor. But he wasn't, was he? I mean, I don't really know who Stephen Foster is, but I know he existed. And while I don't sing his songs every day, you know, they're not like hit tunes on the radio anymore, they're part of the songs of our culture. He's impacted generations. For over 150 years, he's impacted people's lives with his music. You know, I would say that he was successful. He lived a very fulfilled life, even though he didn't get all the fullness. I think that's a great example and a great way to see how that all works. So God is asking us to take the choice in front of you. Is it, you know, a new job that you are having to choose or to seek? Is it buying a new house? Is it, you know, picking a college or a graduate school program? Is it getting a $5,000 bonus from work and deciding what to do with it? Or picking out an exercise regime? But rather than saying, which one is going to give me all the stuff I want, or which one is actually going to give me this sense of fulfillment? It's going to give me this opportunity to what? Be a part of this good stuff that God is making happen in the world around us. Fulfillment. The last one, the consideration I think God is asking us to take on is what I call shalom. Shalom. Shalom it's a Hebrew word. It's often translated as peace. It means a lot more than we think of as peace in English. Peace in English sort of means the absence of violence, but it really means a wholeness of being. Make decisions. Take these choices as you're deciding what way you should go and what you should do and what you should have in your world. How does it contribute to your wholeness of being? And this includes things like beauty, like things like delight and joy in your life. It's a lot more than food and clothing and shelter. But how do these things do it? See, bigger fractures us. Bigger separates us. Bigger tugs us and strains at us. It strains us. It makes us work really, really hard to keep our arms around it. It makes us oppose one another because your bigger threatens me maybe having less. And I'm worried about that. And the only way I can really control my bigger and make sure I have bigger is to watch over it all the time and protect it from you. It divides you and me from one another. And God says, no, you know, remember, I'm passionate about connection. I want you to be whole as an individual and as a people gathered together. How does the next choice that you have to make today, tomorrow, maybe this afternoon, how does it help you to be more whole? How does it pull you together, not stretch or divide you further? So these are these five considerations that I think God is continually asking us. You can see some Bible verses listed under each one. I invite you to go home and take a look at those, read the context around them, kind of get a sense for how does God continually lift these up as sort of the mode of being. You know, the Bible isn't a manual. It doesn't just say, I want you to consider these five things, kind of how I talk about them right now. But it lifts up these themes and it keeps orienting us in directions. And it's important for us to kind of get the big picture of the Bible in order to understand what those are all about. Now, there's one more fill-in on your sheet at the bottom there, and that is this, and that this revolution is going to ask you to redefine what it means to be satisfied. what it means to be satisfied. Because here's the truth, and this is true about me, and I think it's probably true about all of us. Right now, we value those five things. My guess is, you know, I probably don't need and didn't need to talk so long about those five ideas, those five considerations, because we pretty much all affirm them. But the problem is, while we value them, we aren't satisfied them. And because of that, we so seldom actually make our choices according to them. And we tend to make our decisions according to bigger and more. So until we have learned to be satisfied with the world, with the kinds of decisions that those five considerations give us, we're going to constantly be pulled in directions that we don't want to be pulled in. Now, the truth is, I think we're kind of wired for bigger and more. And there's probably some biological, there's probably some evolutionary reasons why it is that way, but it doesn't need to be that way. God has a revolution, and God wants us to find ways that we can live in this world and make our considerations, make our choices that build better lives for ourselves and for the world that we are in, that are more sustainable. God gets this revolution better than we do. So we need to learn to turn to these five characteristics of life that work and to recognize them as the kind of life that we're actually looking for. And I think one of the other honest pieces that I have to share with you as it isn't something that you're going to be very good at doing on your own. I mean, this is really something that comes out of the heart of God. Until we begin to understand the heart of God, I don't know that we're ever going to be very successful at leading these things and find satisfaction in them. When Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you and learn from me, and you will find rest for your soul, I think that's exactly what he was talking about, we're talking about today. You'll find, when you learn from me, when you start carrying the yoke that I give you, you start carrying the way of life that I'm trying to show you, you're going to find that it is the rest that you're looking for. It's going to be that sense of peace. It's going to be the wholeness. It's going to be a world that you actually want to live in and give off to other people. So let's turn to God. This is one of these things that we aren't going to do our own. Would you pray with me? God, we need help. It doesn't work what we're doing. We want more. We try to have bigger. And it's fun to have it, but we're still miserable just so much of the time. Especially the time when we think we can bigger and more our way out of what hurts. We have already discovered that stuff that matters, it's found its way into our hearts and it's opened up ideas and longings. We've experienced the love, the acceptance, the wholeness, and the wonder of the way that you put this world together. Help us to chase after those things. Help us to take the old tools from our hands and set them down. And help us take those tools out of the hands of others and replace them with the tools that you have given us. Help us strengthen and encourage each other as a community where the revolution begins, so that we can turn to you and turn our hearts to you. In your name we pray. Amen.